I'll telegraph it differently to the player. So if they, in that cave where they're about to enter, there might be corpses all over the entrance. And that, they'll know that if there's an innocent looking creature in there, like the bunny from the Monty Python movie,
yeah.
It would be, it's probably not an innocent bunny.
No.
So.
You're listening to a Nerdy Production.
Warning, this is a Nerdy Production.
Welcome into the GM Workshop. My name is Jacob, and my mission in this podcast is to dig up tacit knowledge about role-playing games so we can be better GMs and create great stories, great moments around the table as a GM, and I will try to bring you episodes each Wednesday, plus reviews, action play podcasts, and maybe some bonus episodes coming up your way. Reach out to us on the GM Workshop at Facebook, Twitter, and Discord, and subscribe to the podcast in any podcast app you are using. And now, on to today's episode.
Roll for initiative.
Welcome to the GM Workshop, and welcome inside the GM Workshop. Today we are talking West Marches and the concepts of West Marches. The primary way to play this game is, there's a lot of different ways, and Yannick, my guest today, will touch on a lot of different ways to play this game, but in concept is, as we told, we talked on just before recording here, is this is a game for us with families, with us that cannot have the time that we should have for our hobby, so... But yeah, let's talk about this game, Yannick. But first, as usual, can you tell the listeners where you come from, like role-playing wise, and what you are doing in this time and moment for listeners?
Yeah, so I started being the nerd in the group and started as a GM because no one else wanted to do it and I wanted to play, so I gathered my own players back when I was a young teenager. Started with the old red D&D box set many, many years ago in the late 80s. So I'm an old guy. And then I quickly switched to a game called Drager og Dæmoner, which is a Swedish game.
Dragon and Demons.
Yeah. Translated. It's that. It's a bit like Call of Cthulhu, which I also played a bit. Then I played Shadowrun for several years as well. Then I had a long break, like 15, 20 years. I didn't play anything when I was growing up. going to the university, getting my education and so on, my first job. And then I got reignited my passion for... role-playing again after watching a streamer playing a streamer called 8MeJP, which was playing various role-playing systems. And then I started up again playing first Dungeon World and switched it to D&D 5e when that came out. And right now I'm playing Mithras Classic Fantasy and Tales from the Loop campaign.
With the framework from West Marches concept, so we have to touch on that.
Yeah,
cool. And you said you picked up the mantle as a GM already in the early 80s and figured out that you want to be the forever GM, and you did that until you had a break, and then you picked up the mantle again and found a bunch of players that want you as a GM again. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. It was late 80s, so I'm born in 77.
Yeah,
so it's
you're a little bit older than me, a year older than me.
Yeah.
So. So when you want to sit down with a new group playing West Marches this Friday, you want to start up a new group. What do you expect from the players, and what do the players has to expect from you, or should expect from you?
So I expect that the players have some sort of desire and some sort of goals for their character. Like something, aspiration to what they want to do. in the world. They don't have to know how to get to that goal, but they have to have like an ambition for their characters. Except, I want to be rich. That's a simple goal, but it is something. It could also be like on a quest or after a particular type of monster or something. Maybe they just want to prove themselves to someone or to themselves, or they just want to test their strengths. I just want them to have like a general idea. Why am I doing this? Why is my character doing this? Why am I going to this hostile land where the only rumor I have, I hear, is that people that go there end up dead?
Yeah.
Why am I so fucked up in my head that I think this is the right thing for me to go there? I'm the right kind of person for this job.
Yeah. So you want to have to give the player some kind of idea. You might pick up, tell the players which kind of system they're playing, which kind of characters they are available for them. Maybe you have something in thoughts about whatever race are not permitted or something like that. Or do you have any restriction for players in any kind?
It depends on what system you're playing, of course. But yeah. In my system, I have pretty open for everything. I don't personally like multi-classes so much, but that's also because I like everyone to be like there's a little special mm-hmm. with what they can do. I'm not the big fan of everyone can do everything equally if they just decide to do it. So I like that there's difference between the characters. I don't mind that there's overlap. But I like it that there's different strengths and weaknesses within the group, because then everyone get that time to shine in the spotlight, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, have each player have their own arena that they are the expert in, the con artist
yeah.
or the wizard or whatever. So you sit down with your players and figure out that okay, we are playing West Marches with the Mithras system, and you therefore create some characters in that parameters. When looking at West Marches, how much agency would you put on the players in a West March campaign, because they have to give a lot in some terms to what the players what the characters want in the game, as you said, but you also have the opportunity to create stuff with them. How much agency do you give the players around the table at a session zero or before playing?
So I think it's important that the players beforehand knows kind of how this whole West Matches style is fleshed out, because if you are a very passive player, not necessarily during a session but also between session, and you just show up and you roll some dice and then it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to help you so much in this setup. It doesn't mean that you can't play. It just it requires that there's some players at least that take charge and say, I want us to go there. I've heard some rumors about that place. It sounds interesting. Let's go there. If no one is doing that, the group will die. Not the characters, but the whole setup of the campaign will die, because that is what they have to do. They have to take charge, say, I'll go there. They also have to say, I want to play. That's a good place to start.
Mm-hmm.
Because if... So maybe we should talk a bit on how the West Marches is set up, because in the West Marches, there's not the standard number of players.
No.
Which is like 3 to 5 players. But in this, there's usually at least twice as many players, maybe up to... It depends a lot on your setup.
Players. Yeah, 10 or 20 players,
but,
whatever.
But usually there's at least 10 players in the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not the one that says, I want to play this day, but always wait for someone to come to you and ask, can you play this day?
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll never play.
No.
Because there's so many other players and some of them will be more proactive in saying, I want to play, so let me in. And you'll just never get to play if you are a passive kind of person that way and just want it served for you. So if you have that mentality, you're the right kind of player for the campaign.
Yeah, for sure. So you have to you put the play agency on the motivation to log on to the game or to come around your house and play that Friday or whatever, instead of and you have maybe a chat forum or a messenger or a Facebook group or anything like that, so you can coordinate so not all 10 players shows up in the same day. That could be pretty chaotic. I have played with groups with like 12 and 13 players. That wasn't fun. Cool. When running these sessions, we can touch on what Marchi says in a moment, but just to round up who you are as a GM, when running a singular session, Yannick, how much do you guide the players and how much play agency do they have each session? Because when playing this kind of game, there's a lot of you give some hinges on there's a ruin or there's a castle or there's a might be a dragon in that forest, so you can poke to players and say, hey, that dragon is your bane of existence or whatever, so you might poke that players and say that's really your backstory thing or whatever. How much do you guide the players in taking the choices you have prepared, or and how much do you set up the players to make their own choices?
Yeah, so the games I prefer to run generally is somewhat realistic games, and I prefer it where I can objectively describe a situation. Like, this is what you see. They can ask questions, of course, and I'll give them more details depending on what they roll on the dice and so on, whatever is going to happen in the scenario. But I like to be kind of neutral as a GM in that I'm not going to assume that I'm not going to favor the player so that they will automatically win an encounter. And I'm not going to be unfair and just kill them without out of the blue. So I like to be a middle ground. And that means that I'll make sure to narrate to the players that if they're about to enter a very dangerous zone, I'll not tell them that the zone you're about to enter here requires that you should have spent, assumes you have spent, played 20 sessions already and you are in all decked out in the best gear you can have and you'll definitely, before you even have a chance at this. I'll not say that, but I'll telegraph it differently to the players. So if they, in that cave where they're about to enter, there might be corpses all over the entrance. And that they'll know that if there's an innocent looking creature in there, like the bunny from the Monty Python movie, it would be, it's probably not an innocent bunny.
No.
So they'll know based on what I'm describing to them. So that they'll feel that it's also fair. If they die, it should feel fair. It should be sad that they lose their character, but it should be feel fair. And then it also feels more rewarding when they win.
For sure.
So yeah. I prefer that. And then I also like the homebrew content, and I like to play without a script. So
How do you communicate this to your players? I'm a bit curious. How do you communicate to your players that you, the characters are not heroes, but normal persons with extraordinary skills and can probably win against the troll or the ogre or whatever in the forest. But when combating a dragon, you should use the inside of your head instead of your sword and so on. How do you communicate that the players might lose and lose a character?
So we took that during session zero, and we have had several players joining since we started also. But like I tell them this to everyone, that this campaign, it it can be lethal. If you lose your character, it's tough luck, but that's like a premise to play here. So if you do something really stupid or you just have a series of bad dice roll, your character might die. I'm not going to hold your hand and say, make sure you get home safely. Things, bad things can happen. And they know that. And then the system we play, Mesa's Classic Fantasy, it also helps in the regard that it can go very much from 100 to 0. You can be alive and well, and then 3 bad dice roll from you and 2 great dice roll from the GM, and you're dead. Especially if you have been a bit careless maybe with your resources until then. So I think all the players know this, and also they learn it quite fast, because if they meet like 5 goblins and say, I'll take them single handed and just jump in this system, he will probably die because of like action economy and so on, and what happens when you're getting outnumbered. So
And it's for sure, as in the old, all the basic roleplay versions of the games, like in basic roleplay, Call of Cthulhu, RuneQuest, Warhammer roleplay, and so on, the dice are very swingy, and it's lethal game. You can lose your character pretty quick if you don't think on your feet, for sure. Solution to everything is not violence, and that's there where I'm getting a bit curious about the West Marches and your choice of system, but we can take that in a moment. But I think that's a pretty good sum up how you run your table in so many ways, Yannick. So let's move on to our today's topic. Today's topic is West Marches, created by Ben Robbins. He has set up 3 tenets, which we'll touch on in a moment. It's how to run a game with a large playgroup, with maybe a multiple of GMs in a sandbox world. And Yannick has a lot of insights and tried it in a different ways, in a different systems. Check out our Facebook page, GM Workshop, the podcast, Discord and Twitter if you want to interact with us or be on the podcast. Reach out to us so you can give us your GM advice and perspectives on your favorite game. Yeah, West Marches is a great concept, I think, for us in past the 35 mark years, with kids and a job and all the boring crap in our lives, and so we can set up games where we can pick and choose when we have time to play the games, and as a GM you're not reliable on when your players show up and if the player shows up and so on, but because you just have a pool of other players that can pitch in instead of that. So let's start with the 3 tenets of West Marches, and so all the listeners have an idea where we are, like in the concepts of it. Can you help in that regard, Yannick?
Yeah. So these originally come from a guy called Ben Robbins, who GM'd a campaign back in. He started in 2001 with the campaign, but he posted this, the learning from it, in 2007. So as far as I know, he started when D&D's 3rd edition came out, and that was a system he used for it. And he was a bit annoyed with how his other campaign was running. And then he had a big group of friends, and they all wanted to play sometime, but it was a bit of a hassle getting the right mix of players that could play for a long campaign and so on. So instead, he decided, let's try and flip this around and then make it easy for me as a GM, pretty much. So the first basic, he had like 3 different things that he built it around. First one was that there was no static group. It was not the same group of players, but a big pool as players, as we already described. And then there was not there's not a fixed play schedule for each player. It was not like we meet every Monday and then you have to be there or you're out or the whole session falls apart or something. So there was no fixed schedule for the players. And finally, there was the adventures in the world. For each adventure, there was no predefined plot. Instead, it was... These adventures were like one-shots in the sense that they started and ended at the same place, but they all took place in the same area, and it was like a persistent world. So if they tore down a big castle in one session, the next session that castle will no longer be there. And then finally, it was also when there's no predefined product, how do they what do they do then? So that was up to the players to decide before they started playing. So this is what I call a sandbox game. And if you don't know the term, I have it from computer games. So it's like games like Rust, RimWorld, Don't Starve Together, even Grand Theft Auto, I would call it.
Yeah, sandbox game. And Skyrim, sandbox. Skyrim was the big one. Yeah. And Fallout, the old Fallout games. We are both old guys, so that's where I got the first Elder Scrolls games and so on. Mm. So yeah, so the sandboxy... structure of West Marches are the core tenets of, because if you as you said there's no fixed group, there's no fixed meta plot, there's no great scheme, there's no tunnels of plots that players has to be moved through in any way, but when you suddenly sit down with your group players now and play, you have a lot of different ways to run each session and put in some storylines. So where are the key marks for basically all other sandbox games? Because we can run this game like any other sandbox game. A lot of players or a lot of persons do this in Forgotten Realms or Ravenloft or even Dark Sun or and Star Wars universe and so on. How did this defies these structures in those games?
So the biggest difference in my eyes is that this the part that there's no steady group and there's no fixed schedule for the players. That's what separates the West Marches style of game for me the most, because it means that everyone that's been playing a long campaign, they know that there's some players, they just become more leaned back and just show up and just take in the story and then they go home. Mm-hmm. And if that at best, but sometimes there's also people that where things happen in their life where they will no longer be able to prioritize the campaign as strictly as they could in the beginning. And that's just life. Everyone that has played a long campaign knows this. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very big difference here. And also that you're not stuck with the planning role as a DM, that you have to actively poke everyone. Can you make it next session? You haven't answered yet. Can you please let us know so we can figure out if we are still playing or if we can make other plans?
Yeah.
Because that's not a hurdle here. So West Marches, it has like some things in the sandbox. The thing, there's like general rules there. I don't know if you want to talk about that or
to
talk about
let's go.
Play. So there's like some guidelines. I'll just name them from the top of my head. About the West Marches. The reason it's called West Marches was in his campaign they went west. Mm-hmm. The players, they had been crossing a big desert or something, and they were going west, new land, unexplored land. You can also see it as the same way as coming from Europe to America. And then there's all this new land. If you go back east in a Westmarches campaign, you're kind of retiring because you're going back to the home, safer world, where you just get a regular job. And like you're retired if you go east. Mm-hmm. So the whole campaign is about going west into these marches or whatever. It could be mountains, whatever.
Yeah.
It's just that's the name. And then you start in a safe zone, a town, usually. And as so the premise is that as long as you're in town, you're safe. This is where you recover between adventures. This is where you maybe train or learn stuff to improve your character. Like downtime, that's where that takes place.
Mm-hmm.
This also means that in Westmarches, one of the things you often see in Westmarches campaigns is that there's some sort of city development as a part of the game.
Yeah.
Where often the players, but maybe also just like the campaign as it takes on, the city will develop somehow. Maybe one of the characters is a religious person and wants to found a temple or something in the honor of his god, or maybe someone is into shady business, so they establish a building where you can do shady stuff in the basement or something like that.
Yeah.
So city development, that's often a thing in Westmarches. But where the adventures are, that's in the wilderness. This is the exploration sandbox. You don't know about, you know that there's a world down there, but it's unknown. Regular people don't go out there. That's where the adventures come into play.
Yeah.
And then also, the closer you are to the starting location, the easier it usually is, and the further you away from the safe zone you get, the more challenging enemies you will meet.
Yeah, and normally the way to play this game is like in a fantasy setting with fantasy races and creatures and classes and so on, and more 5e Dungeon and Dragons, and that's the, I think, the most of playing this system. And you have played a campaign two in the 5e. We can touch on that in a second, but we can use this model in a heap of ways like in, I couldn't imagine a Star Wars campaign where we found this new system and we have to explore this system. There's we can take a cyberpunk kind of setting, the Shadowrun, as you played a lot. There's a great part of the city that are not ravaged by diseases anymore, but there's a lot of cool stuff in that area and so on. So we can.
So my
yeah. Yeah.
My girlfriend is playing a host. She's DMing an X-Men campaign right now, which is a very narrative campaign.
Yeah.
But it's built around the same thing in regards to scheduling.
Mm-hmm.
So their safe zone is not a town, but it's like an X-Mansion style.
Yeah, Hoku. It's like a hero's Hoku.
And it could also be, like you recently here on the podcast talked about, to the guy behind Tales from the Loop.
Mm-hmm.
If you could play this in a Tales from the Loop setting, I think that I might do that in my next campaign. And then instead of it being like a town, it could just be like all the kids are living on the same road.
Yeah.
And then that road is like safe zone.
Yeah.
So as long as they're there, they're home.
Yeah.
And then they're safe. But when they go out on adventures in the surrounding area, that's where the adventures happen.
Yes, and then you can have a play group of 10 kids that deviates from Friday to Friday or something like that. When you as a DM has the time, it's where the players have to raise their hand and say, I can do that this Friday or this Thursday or whatever.
Yeah.
That's epic.
But let's focus on the classic version of West End game, and West Marches, and it's the fantasy thing. It's where we go out and kill off monsters, find treasures in forests and mountains and so on. Because when we look at the West Marches as a concept, the conflict are fairly, like, I think 80% or so in a violent context to defeat your opponent in some way. You can sneak around it or push a boulder down into the dragon's head or so on, but mostly it's not about the diplomacy. It's not about hustling a racketeer band or something like that. So that's why I think a lot of players uses the 5e game, because it's built for combat. 5e is great for combat, it's great for hero gaming. But what are your experience with the 5e version of West Marches, Yannick?
So my experience is that 5e is built around characters that, at least at higher levels, turn out to be almost like demigods. They're very heroic. They can do practically anything they want, and mechanically they have a lot of resources. Spellcasters have more spell slots than they can use in one evening, and others can keep going for a long time. And there's many ways to recover and keep going, and that's not if you build your campaign around a series of one shots, you want it should be challenging the content. Because if it's not challenging, it's not potentially lethal, and if it's not potentially lethal, it's not a dangerous wilderness. Then they're just on vacation, on sightseeing, and that should not be the feel in a gritty fantasy exploration game.
Yeah, because you said the gritty part, because a lot D&D is by far the most popular game, and most players play this game because it's not gritty. It's where the players wins and it's easy to understand why they are the protagonist in the story and always wins, because, as you said, the system helps a lot and give the players some great agency in their, through their character sheet, that they can defeat any danger out there. So therefore, the way you have experienced West Marches, maybe not the correct way to sell West Marches for D&D players, for example, because they want this experience that they move into one area, get level up, get magic items, move into next, so on. That's the reason they're playing this game. When did you figure out that this wasn't your playstyle anymore, or how did you see this?
Yeah. Maybe I never liked that part about 5e. I played it a lot, but I never liked that part, and I don't think it helps GM either to create challenging encounters for the players, which is what I like in my games. Mm-hmm. You can house rule things and make it that way. If you Google a bit around on West Marches, you'll notice that practically everyone is playing fantasy D&D system in West Marches. Yeah. So I'm not saying it can't work. For me, it was just not what I wanted. From where I came from, I had I tried to play 5th edition in the beginning by the book, following the rules, following the challenge rating system, and the combat was so boring that I got so mad with it, and then I said, okay, I'm only making very deadly encounters, and then that was still very easy if you just followed the rules. Yeah. And then when you like poke around, but you're also supposed to throw in other stuff like environmental hazard and so on, which is fine. I did that already.
Yeah.
But even more, I just don't think the rules are based around it. If you study the 5th edition rules, you'll also see that it's based around having six encounters per long rest, which I personally have never met a 5e player that plays in a campaign where that is a reality.
That's a lot of combat.
Yeah, so
wow.
For me, that that very much goes against then having a series of one shots, because in a one shot you can't exhaust all those resources you have in 5e. In my opinion, you can at the lower levels, I would say. So if you just kill off the characters around the fourth level or fifth level, you can probably have a good experience in.
That's my experience too. Like when the players reach 7th level in D&D 5th edition, it's getting so boring, so fast. And then the reason playing West March is the exploration and getting better and so on, are losing the potency in that term, because the players are playing for being having a better sheet, better character sheet in the game. So As in conflict resolutions, the violence is the most used in the way I read into the West March, is because it's a barren country. It's not there's not any civilization and so on, or very limited civilization. You can of course put in some weird civilizations and so on, but then the players are still have to communicate with them in some way.
So I actually have something to say about that, because I don't see any reason why there can't be any civilizations there already. It's just from the player's point of view, this is unknown territory.
Yeah.
I also think that if it's just combat, it's the wrong campaign for many players, because there's also if you have if you have classes, for instance, in your system, and you have someone that's a good diplomat, and someone that's a good fighter, and someone that's a spellcaster. If there's not any diplomatic encounters where you can use your people skills to handle situations, if there's no people to talk to except in the town where everything is safe, then that character doesn't work in that campaign, and then you'll have a more uniform group of players that can pretty much do the same. So I think in a good West Magic game, you will have these. They will just not be known to the players from the beginning. I also play without languages in my settings, so when they meet monsters, they can communicate with most of them if they are sentient beings. But that's because of the homebrew setting I've made. That makes sense in my world. It might not in other settings, but so that you should keep in mind what you want the game to run like, and then you can just build the setting around that. In my opinion.
Cool. Yeah. So putting in those. Weird civilizations and so on beyond the borders, beyond the West Marches, as you said, it's could be cool, and figure out how to, as you said, use the players' arenas to make the conflicts resolute in another way than in violence. So we can have, because when you look at the system you have chosen, so we can touch on this. Because when we look at West Marches in general, it's exploration, combat, maybe some diplomacy, as you said, but it's mostly exploration and combat. And then you say, okay, this is not fun for me because I don't want 5 combat in the session. Wow, I didn't. I just would go home if my GM said that to me. Took out the 5e, which are the most popular version of West Marches around the net, as you said, and put in this much more hardcore system. You has to give the player some options that are not violent resolution, because then you are going to create a lot of characters each session, because Mythos are not... it's not hero gaming, for sure. It's better than RuneQuest, but it's still not a... It's not hero gaming for sure. So what were your thoughts about this version of West Marches, if you can say that?
So I wanted a place. I wanted a place where the characters, the heroes, they were not automatically going to defeat every encounter. I wanted a campaign where it was okay. But the right decision sometimes was, let's flee. We have gone to a place where we shouldn't be. If you have, you've probably seen Lord of the Rings. They're in a mine. They have touched something there they shouldn't have. They have awakened something. They know they have to flee. That is the right decision. They are still the heroes of Lord of the Rings. But the right decision there was to flee. I think that's a good thing in a campaign. And also, if what you flee from, because you don't know what it is, you don't know how to defeat it, you've never heard about it, but then you go on other adventures, and then you found a book that says, oh, this creature you met, it's actually an experiment from this old wizard, and this experiment he had, blah, blah, blah. Maybe you find a weakness for this creature, and then you go on another adventure, and then you find this this reagent that is the weakness of this creature. Maybe it's a crystal or something. And then you have to go and make a weapon out of the crystal, but there's no one in the town that can make a weapon from this crystal because it's a very unknown technique. But you have met someone from a different race somewhere in the area on one of your quests. Maybe they know how to make a weapon from this. And then you go there and you make a weapon from this. And then series of adventures, you finally get a crafted weapon that you think might have a chance against this being. And you go back to this beast you had to flee from because whatever you did to it, it wouldn't kill it. And then you throw this spear you have made from the crystal, and it pierces its heart and it dies. And it's so much greater achievement, and it's a much bigger, better adventure than you go there, you kill it, and then that's it.
It isn't just a lump of hit points that you have to beat down and cast fireball at.
And also this way of hearing rumors, and you gain clues and you gain tidbits that when you find them, it might make sense, it might not, it might be lead to something else. That's the key bit of having a good campaign running for a long time, because since you only have like a one-shot adventure, the people that are on that adventure, they should have gotten at least one clue to the next, to a follow-up adventure whenever they are back in town. Maybe it's just maybe the clue could just be they are on the top of a hill and they see in the distance a spire of a tower, or they see a river, and then next time they say, oh, we saw a river down north, up north last time we went there, wonder where that's leading, or if there's any civilization next to the river, let's go there next time. And then next time when the players sign up to play, someone that was there a previous session will say, I've seen this river, I want to go there, anyone want to take along? And then they might decide to go there, or they might decide to go somewhere else. The whole debate about where to go, that should take place up front. not during the session.
Yeah, so you can. So you also have a chance to prepare something cool for the players as well, and so on.
Yeah, because something I was scared about myself when I first was hearing about the West Marches was that if you have this big sandbox where everything can happen, where players can go wherever they want, does that mean infinite preparation? And I really want to emphasize that it means quite opposite of that. It means less preparation.
Yeah, if you have players that are good to announce or communicate what they want. So that's key, and that's back to the session zero about the expectation from you and your players, and you have to make emphasize. But still, it's as you said at the beginning, it's players that want to be in that game. They're not there to just listen into a story and roll some dice. They actually want to be there because if they are not, they will first of all take a place for another player that might have the time and want to be there. But also you have a player that has not a good reason to be in that scenario or that session for so many reasons. So give the players the agency to create the story and set up the stories with you, right?
But it doesn't have to be every player that is like that, because then you can also have a bad group dynamic where you have five alpha players that all want to go on their specific quest. They have their mindset and they will not do anything else. Sometimes it's good to have these tag-along players, but you have to have a handful of these players that drives where to go, and you need to them to be able to communicate with the rest of the group. At least just agreeing. If it's the same players every time, it says, let's go further west, and the rest in the group is yeah, fine by me. Then you, as a GM, know, okay, they just want to continue west, and then that's fine.
Yeah, and one of the tenets I've seen around about West Marches is that you will try not to have the same players every session that have this the same players with the same players. So there has to be a differentiation in the different players. And I try to figure out to combine other players together, so there's not the same four players every Friday, and every other Friday it's four other players. So we have to, you can mix them up as such. So that's a pretty important part of this as well. And I thought about this as you said the X-Men version of this, because some, as you said, the Maybe we have a wizard or something like that that can cast a specific spell to defeat a specific whatever creature, and we have to lure that wizard out to the west with us. So you can make some hinges into the other players, and so it's like, okay, we need you, David, because you have this spell that can defeat this basilisk or whatever. So you can make some setups in that regard as well. That's what would be pretty cool, I think.
But this is very individual from group to group, or West Marches campaign from West Marches campaign. Because in my group, it doesn't work like this. It's not the players actually that sets the group. They just say, but in my group, so I'll just explain how we do it, the way we plan this the sessions is that I, as a GM, I have to be there. So we can only play when I have time for it, and I have a busy week. But I'll put up, we use Facebook as the way we communicate between sessions. It could be whatever media you want, but I'll use Facebook as an example here. So I put up a Facebook event saying, on this day, from this from 7 o'clock and then until 3 or 4 hours, we play. Any one of my players can sign up, and then I also in the sign up says 3 days before we play, I'll close for new sign ups. And then I'll look at who signed for this. And then I'll pick a group, and I'll do that from rules we have clarified upfront, that I'll prioritize whoever has not been playing for the longest time. So if you haven't been playing for a long time, you get in. That also means that if you are the player that signs up every single time, you will not be there every time. But it's also the premise of the whole campaign. That is that you can't be there every time. So it is super important when you have the session zero with your players that they understand this part, that they know it's not, I deserved my spot, I have to be there. You have to agree on some way of your, how you are letting people in. I play with my younger brother, for instance, and if I just, whenever he signed up, says, oh, but he's my brother, so he has to get in, that would infuriate other players. It would not be fair, and my brother would not like that either. But that's a whole different discussion. So I think this is something you really have to talk to your players, and you have to make them realize why you're doing this. But so for me, this is the most important thing. That there's no the way that you know that you have this rotation. By the way, the way we are remembering who is signing up, we use Excel. I use an Excel sheet for that, and then I'll see. I have a big history here, so I can see like since we started, who signed up, who was benched for that session, who was ready if I needed them, who was not there, who never responded, who signed up but didn't show. I keep track of all that. And I'll take that into consideration when I form the next group. I'm not looking into that the group has to have a frontliner and they have to have a spellcaster and they have to have a healer and so on. So, for instance, last session we played, we had two sneaky guys and we had two wizards. Yeah. There was no frontliner.
No brute force.
No, but what they agreed to was, because the one of the wizards was an illusionist and the other one could cast invisibility as well. So this group, they decided to go on a stealth mission behind enemy lines.
Yeah.
And they were actually successful in doing that because they had the right setup for it. If they had a big guy in plate armor in that group, it would have messed up their whole plan.
Mm-hmm.
But based around who was in the group, they made a unique group. And a unique mission that they would not have chosen otherwise.
No, that's cool. Yeah, that's a cool. So, cool. But when we were set with the choosing of the specific skill or spell or whatever, I thought about the crystal example you gave because you may have to use a whatever wizard to create the magical fire to forge the crystal in a certain way and so on. So you. But you know one of the guys in your group, which are not in the group today, then you can say, okay, this beast of whatever burden out there in the mountains, we have to wait to defeat that guy because we have to get our guy, which has the magic powers to create that crystal and so on. So you can link in plots to a later term to help the players in a narrative way to figure out how to not only interact with you as a GM, but also to interact with the other players. So that was my thought train about it. But it's a pretty cool way you are doing it. So it's cool. So it just was an idea. So that's pretty good. That's a pretty cool idea to have this. You have a tight system when choosing this for sure.
I'd like to say, because this, I think this is very important with the whole mesh matcher style. I think this is more important than the whole how do you run this in a fantasy campaign.
Mm-hmm.
This whole group dynamic and it's not being the same group every time. It is the best thing about this group, not only for me, but also for my players, that they don't feel obligated to be there every time.
No, that's
so they can say, oh, this Friday I'm going to a soccer game, I'm going to a party or whatever. And it's not, I'm not the letting anyone down by saying so. It's in the setup. It's what the setup is supposed to be able to handle.
Yeah.
And that's the greatest thing for me, and it's also for my players. That's what they... It can be annoying sometimes if you have, oh, this day I have nothing else to do except playing, and I'm not in the group. Mm-hmm. That can be a letdown. But it's more annoying when you were set to play and then the day before someone says, by the way, I can't make it tomorrow, we have to cancel.
Yeah, because my wizard has to be there to get the plot going or whatever, and I can't because my little sister have a birthday or whatever. Yes. And as I said in the beginning, this West March's concept or the way to run this game are good for us in the family life or the real life, getting a hold on our hobby, which we love so much, and try to figure out how to play. And but in the West Marches, when I've read, I know you don't do this, but if you have a group like 10 or 12 or even 20 players, you can have one or two or three GMs rotating, and because if you can't this Friday, nobody can play that Friday.
Yeah.
Because you have your sister's birthday, but you have four or five players that are really eager to play and want to immerse into their characters and want to find out what that mountains over there is about. And then another guy picks up the mantle and say, "Hey, I'm the GM. This one, I will improvise what that mountain is and what kind of mountain there is in that." And what kind of dungeon and what kind of weird beast we have to use crystal to kill in that mountain. So that's also a level extra on what you are doing in your group, and that's I'm really excited about, because I have been a lot of groups and I've always been the always DM, but sometimes I cannot be there, and then the players has to stay home and whatever, or play board games or see Paradise Hotel or whatever instead of playing role-playing games. And that's a pretty shame. That's a shame often. But in this setup with multiple game masters and trusting each other enough to that this is a collaborative story and a collaborative sandbox you are building together, there's no right or wrong. So in the mountain there is some kind of creature, then this is canon in that kind of world, in this world you are playing. So so I think that's one of the coolest thing about West Marches in the structure, for sure, for me. Example.
Yeah.
So
it would require some
trust.
In my eyes, it requires trust, but it also requires some sort of extra preparation or maybe debriefing after a session where you kind of have to coordinate with the other GMs that, mm-hmm. by the way, if they go here, I've already said that there's a big cave or a castle here. They have already went in there once and cleared it, but if you go in there again, you can fill up the castle with new mobs if you want.
A primary GM or secondary GM and a tetra GM, so there's a hierarchy. So if you can play, then David can play, or if David can play, Fiona can GM, and so on. So there's a hierarchy in where the which are the primary GM and so on. So that's different structures I've seen around in different West Marches play groups around the big internets. So yeah, that was just a thought, a train of thoughts. So yeah, sorry I interrupted you.
I was about. There was not about multiple GMs. This was about something else.
Yeah.
I have something that I actually didn't expect, but like a fun learning from this, which I really enjoy, is that it was. It's related to what I talked to about irregular group compositions. So sometimes you have a weird group composition.
Yeah.
It's also just that it's not the same, because in my experience, whenever I've been running a longer campaign, the players, they have usually thought about something. Where do my character come from? What is making him tick? Like, they have some sort of personality and background and so on in mind for their character when they start playing. It develops over time, of course. But the whole sharing about this, getting to learn each other's characters, that usually happens in the first sessions you play with the same players. And then they kind of know that. And then they'll also be at the table when this character encounters new stuff and they develops into something different. They learn stuff. But they already know this, the players. Their character might not know it, but and the players will then not talk to each other so often about what happened last session, because they were all there. But a big good thing about this West Marches is that when it's not the same players every time, then sometimes you have a player saying, oh, you should not go down to that river. Last time I was there, I was attacked by a crocodile. I almost lost my left leg. And then they'll just maybe discuss, can I see your bite marks? And then you'll proudly show them your wound from last time. And so there's different stories that they have to share. They have to share the knowledge about where to go and what clues they have found. When someone sees, oh, it's just crocodiles down there, and then someone else know, oh, for this building we have to build, we have to have like crocodile skin to cover the building to save it from acid rain or whatever. So you'll have different knowledge, and there'll also be different synergies and roles from time to time within the group. So in one group, you would have two characters that works brilliantly in combat, like a classic guy has to stand in front of a mob, another guy has to stand behind the mob to do extra damage or something. But next time, you won't have the same synergy, but instead you would have like a group with all ranged casters, ranged people with bows and so on. So instead, the combat strategy would be to kite them up and shoot them all from afar and pull backwards while they're attacking them so they never reach them. So it's a different experience every time you're there, even though you're just there and it's the same world, but it would never, it's not a stale a group composition, just both between the characters talking to each other, but also in the roles they have in the group and the synergies they have with the other players.
Yeah,
I think that's very important.
Yeah, as you said, you have also rotation of new players that comes into a group, or and maybe some leave them, then they accept, okay, I have to play whatever football these days every time, so I'm never on the list, so I have to quit the group, and some, and you might recruit someone new and so on. But maybe some of our listeners want to know how to rotate in new characters, because if I am the unlucky one that have to work like a month and a month and a half, and I'm not able to play, but the other players have played like 10 sessions or something like that, then my character are much less powerful, because we have an XP system or a skill system or something like that in the D&D, some most of our listeners know about. There's an XP system, so I might be a level 3 guy, but the other are level 5. So the structure in the composition of the group might also vary in too much, so that it's hard for you to, as a DM, to make the group balanced and the encounter balanced, so that the level 5 guys has fun, but the level 3 guy will not die instantly and so on. So how do you help the players or give the players some mechanics to balance the sheets, the character sheets in between sessions?
So there's various ways to do this. I'll say some of the things where this, I know this can be an issue, and I've seen
not only in Westmarch.
I've seen different ways. Yeah. So one of the ways you could do this is to allow everyone to have more than one character. If they are, let's say you play D&D and you get to level 6 on the character you started with, but you also had a big rotation of players, so maybe you just have some in your group that's not playing often, they're still level 1 or 2. Those players, they may not want to go on the same adventure because of the system D&D. So in that setting, you could maybe allow for the players to have more than one character, and then just like 5 levels apart or something. And then for each adventure, you could decide on which to go with your player.
Yeah.
That's one way of doing it. You could also have like a catch-up mechanic. We have that in my system, which is also a very much more forgiving system. In Mithras Classic Fantasy, there is still levels. It's called ranks in this.
Yeah.
But it's not. You could also just disregard them completely. But there is the experience, and you learn more over time. You become better.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as dominant as it is in 5e. For instance, when you go from level 1 to level 2, and then suddenly you can take twice as much beating before you die.
No.
In Mithras, you have the same amount of hit points from if you're the lowest level or if you're the highest lowest rank, or the highest rank, which is rank 5. And also rank 5 is practically never going to happen. We have been playing for 2 years. We don't have anyone higher than rank 3. So it doesn't mean that they are equally skilled as when they started. It just means that this system is more flat than a 5th edition.
Yeah.
So you could mitigate this through the system. We also have, in my campaign, we have made, the players have made a building.
Mm-hmm.
A city improvement in their building called the Hall of Heroes.
Mm-hmm. Very original.
Yeah. So they use this to sleep in, and they use it to store their stuff. But one of the side effects of this building, like a bonus we agreed on when I designed this with one of the players,
mm-hmm.
was that whenever there was a lot of players, like 5 players that became rank 2,
yeah.
The rank 1 players, they would get a bonus whenever they had been on a quest. So it was like a catch-up mechanic, so they could level faster.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have a lot that's level 3. So now it's both level 2 and level 1 characters that get a big bonus in leveling. So new characters, they level faster in my campaign to catch up.
Yeah.
But the highest level characters, they all never have this extra boost.
No, it doesn't care. They don't care because they are the most powerful characters in the group anyway. So
maybe you could also maybe you could also in your system have a way to give them more experience from the beginning, so they were more skilled, so they would not start at the same level as players that you were in your campaign from the day zero.
Mm-hmm.
But that also depends on your system if it allows for that.
Yeah.
So there's also difference between if you play a very complex rule-heavy system or a narrative-focused system, because
like Pathfinder 5 or Pathfinder 2 or whatever.
Westmarch can work in both.
Mm-hmm.
And if I would say a complex system is good for a long campaign usually.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, because it allows more detail and more sense of progression between each adventure. In my experience,
mm-hmm.
you can kind of feel I'm slightly getting better at something every time you play,
because
the characters are usually that there's usually that many details on the character that you can tweak something a little bit every time you play.
Yeah.
Which I think is a very good thing when you have a long campaign.
Yeah.
And also in a complex system, I think it's better for fair character death. Mm-hmm. And by fair, I mean that if the rules are clear on how combat works and you can kind of... it's recommended when you play West Marches that you play with open dice rolls.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want it to be the players against the environment and the monsters and the world, and not the players against the GM. Often I've experienced this myself, and I've read others, including Ben Robbins, which came up with this style, saying that when they were in combat, you sometimes as a GM participate, or at least want to participate, or at least think about how can the group actually beat this encounter with the setup they have, because you have often the encounters laid out before knowing which group actually went there.
Yeah.
But the whole battle plan, what do we do with this group we have here now? You know, it's not tailor-made for you, so there's no, oh, we have to have the wizard do this and the warrior do this and thief do this when we do this encounter, but our group, how do we defeat this encounter? And I think when you have these open dice rolls, you can see that it's... You can see what the monsters roll. You can see, okay, he decided to crit me by a dice roll, luck of dice roll. That's unfortunate on me. I might die now.
Yeah.
But you saw the dice roll. You knew the risk that this monster could crit you. You could also see that this monster is a big monster, so you probably know that... The big chance, if this guy is 3 times as tall as you, if he hits you, it will hurt.
Yeah.
It should hurt in a gritty system, because otherwise there's something wrong.
Yeah. So as we talked on before recording, you are just the facilitator of the rules. You have set up the parameters, the barriers in the sandbox, and then the players can play around. If they want to move to the big troll on the hill, it's up to them, and they might die, but you are still only the facilitator. You have some stat block on this troll, and the players have some a fair idea that this troll could be dangerous, and if they go into combat with this troll, they might die. So you are only the facilitator of the rules, and then you have these open dice rolls, so the players are not feel cheated in any way, and the other way around, you are not protecting the players by hiding the roles, and that's some of the, I think it's a good choice. I'm very rarely using a DM screen myself, only for tables and such. But so that's the only reason I'm using that for sure. But I think it's great to notify that from the players that. You are not against the players, you are with the players creating a great combat story, and if they can't beat the troll, then they have the always have the option to flee or at least have another go at it in a later time or something like that. So it's not do or die. It's not a combat to the death every time, and that's maybe some groups might oversee this as an option. So that's is a pretty important statement in this system for sure, and in this way to play, because it's very OSR like in many ways, and that's some of the outreach from the Gygax times in Dungeons & Dragons, because there was no fixing of the dice. That's just hardcore, and actually some of the original Gygax postings and scenario writings, it's the same as Westworlds, that at Westmarches, that we have 10 or 20 players but playing in different ways and in different times and around the table. So that's pretty cool. So
if I can just round off the whole with the complexity. Because I mentioned some advantages of having a complex system, but that's like a rules heavy system. But there's, I also see some advantages of having a more narrative focused system.
Mm-hmm.
Usually in those systems,
like Tales.
Yeah, usually in those systems, for a fantasy game, it could be something like Dungeon World if you want a narrative focused. Rule set that's very fast to get into and make your character and so on.
Yeah, Power by the Apocalypse game.
Yeah, it's in that series of games.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and one of the advantages with a narrative system is that they usually have a lot faster character creation process than very rule heavy. And if you have, if you're built it around being high lethal, it's nice that you don't have to spend 5 days to create your character, and also it's if your system is based around having playing one shots, it's okay that in this setup, because Westmarches is just one shot. So if the character works well in a one shot setting, it's which I think something like Dungeon World does.
Or Mörkborg, the Swedish guys at the Stockholm Cartel, if you know that system.
I've heard of it. I've never played it.
That would be pretty cool, and it's very fast. There's an app you get when you buy the game, so that can create a character with one touch on your phone. So that's pretty fast to create a new character for sure. And as you said, the narrative game are more easy to let go of players and create new characters, and while you have a system like Mythras or Pathfinder 2nd Edition or whatever, it's the process of creating a character, or one of my system I'm trying out soon again, it's the Black Void system. There's a lot of crunch, and the more crunch, the more different choices the players have to take, and they might take an hour and a half to create a character, then the session is ended if they died in the beginning or something like that. So that's it's pretty important to figure out what the balance in that terms are for sure.
Some of the narrative systems, they also encourage you by the rules to take part of the description of the world.
Yes,
It's part of the rule in that system, part of the rules in that system, that you as a player help describe what's in front of you. And it's not always up to the GM. You can play like that in D&D or whatever system you use as well. But I think some of the narrative systems, they encourage that style of play more. And I think that works very good in a sandbox setting. So that's another. And finally, the whole leveling part we talked about, when you have this where your character develops over time in a complex system, as I said before, that also can create issues with what happens when the characters are too far apart in level.
And you can often
get around that if you just use a more narrative focused system.
Yeah,
so.
More easygoing systems for sure.
Yeah.
Because also, again, the deadliness is more frequent as in the Mythras. And I think Mythras is a fine balance between the hero gaming and the very easygoing narrative games. So it's a fine balance between those two. So it's a great choice for this, I think. Some of the when I'm looking at West Marches and a lot of other sandbox-ish games, I often find myself not get invested as a GM because I love to play wide stories with deep plots, with a lot of plot hooks into different areas of the world. If it's called Divinity Lost or it's Forbidden Lands and so on, it's like putting in a lot of things, strings and so on, and taking a lot of time to create a fleshed out world and have a meta plot, because the meta plot in this way to play could be apparent, but there's not a, it's not necessary, but that's also a weakness. So can we touch on some of the weaknesses in this way to play, Yannick?
Yeah,
to round it up to.
Well, so it can be difficult. Like it's an advantage, but it's also a disadvantage that you're not playing every time. It can be a disadvantage from the player's point of view that they might not know what's going on. They might miss the big spider web behind all things because they all only see bits and pieces of it whenever they're playing. So they can be harder for the players to gather these information. In my campaign, and I would encourage everyone else to do this, but it should be completely player-driven. That is to take game notes from a session note from each session and have them shared somehow. I encourage you to have, whether you do that on a Discord server or on Facebook, or you do it in Roll20 or just on a piece of paper or whatever you do, I very much encourage you to do this. But I would suggest you do it somewhere where you can access them online when you're not playing, because this encourages the players to think about the campaign when they're not playing. And that is what you want as a DM in this setup, especially.
Have the players to create a journal or something. And then I've seen a lot of guys running West Marches giving the players bonuses if they want to share their stories with the other players and so on. And I think it's a wrong way to do it, but it could encourage some players to really. I had a play group where I have two players that they wrote down everything that happened. Sometimes it's too much, so they didn't follow the story, so that was pretty annoying sometimes. But it was great to have those notes for later. And sometimes I stole the notes because I forgot the name of some kind of NPC or whatever. That was pretty cool. Have the shared memory with the playgroup, so the meta plot or the, as you said, the spider web of the evil antagonist can be unfolded throughout the campaign. Sometimes very hard in this kind of game, because you maybe miss 4, 5, or 6 sessions, and then you come back to the group and they, hey, and we saw that the wizard and the troll and blah 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 blah, and there's like why do I even care, because I didn't when I have not been here. So this memory of the players could be a way to do it.
Lenient with sharing the same sort of information more often than you would or in a regular campaign, because there's a rotation of players, and there's also probably a bit longer between the session for each player than there would be usually. So I think that's also okay to do sometimes in this session, to be more lenient with that. You talked about reward for doing stuff like sharing information. I'll just give an example from my campaign with how we have been handling this. For each session we play, we have 4 roles. We usually play with 4 players each session. So we have 4 roles that we divide out amongst the players just to speed things up and make sure this should just be there every time. And we have one that's responsible of navigating the world, like making sure you get where you want to do, navigating a map and so on. He'll make the dice roll to navigate, make sure you get there. And it's also his responsibility to make sure that the common map is updated after the session. Then we have someone that's in charge of making sure that they're not ambushed. Just scouting, doing what in D&D would be perception roles while traveling. And then we have someone that's responsible for being the quartermaster, gathering all the loot they find so they don't spend time during the adventure distributing that. They just do that at the end of the session, saying, we found these pearls and this gold, and we found this magic knife. We don't know what they can do yet. And then we found a horse. And then it's a quartermaster's responsibility to make sure that this is distributed evenly. But it's the players themselves that decide these roles, by the way, which is important. And then the last role we have is the guy that's responsible for noting down the story. What happened? And it doesn't have to be a guy that can write, because it can also just be a guy that when he comes back to the town, he goes to the bar and he just spill out the stories from the adventures at the bar. So there's no prerequisite that this has to be like the wizard that knows how to write that does this part. And this role we have in my system, because it's always more work to be the guy taking notes. So in my system, that the person that does notes, he gets a little more XP than the rest. So this is also a way, if you're behind in experience to some of the other characters, you can also just say, I'll take notes, then I'll catch up fast.
So what are these in this West Marches, what do you want of this game, so it can be better, or some tools, or can you have any, are there anything that you are not using, or do you want to emphasize something that are pretty bad in this this setup?
I long think that the setup is so open and you can do whatever you want with it. That I think that one of the pitfalls is that you see a video and say, okay, I need to have all this. I need to have it from the beginning. I don't think you do. I would look at it and say, what's the most useful part about this for me? There are some things I think you definitely should take away with it, but like something I see often, it's something like encounter tables, random encounter tables. And you can build a complete Westmarch campaign around these encounter tables if you do, and it can run perfectly. But personally, I don't like those. I like saying, for instance, in these mountains, I know that there are these sort of mobs that's living there. So the chances they're running into some of those, they are higher. But it's very rare that I'll just roll on the table to see what they meet. I'll usually have like a handful of encounters for traveling and a handful of encounters for locations. I assume they might go to soon because they have heard about them or they have talked amongst themselves about going there at some point soon. Or maybe it's just something I created a long time ago because I thought it would be cool to make a undersea dungeon or something. So I know I have these encounters ready in case I need them, but it's very rare that I'll turn to a table. And then I think the biggest pitfall is that you just run this as a normal campaign without really ensuring that your players understand the whole rotation of players.
Audience.
So if you do something that's out of the ordinary, you need to explain why you're doing it. Not just, and you need to be open on how you're going to do it. Because you don't want any drama between the players. It also depends a lot on your players. Many of my players for many, many years, and I know that they're not drama persons, but there's also some of the players in my group that I don't know that well. They're very recent. Some of them are completely new to role-playing games. I don't think it's a prerequisite that you have to be good at role-playing games. I actually think that in the system we are using, since we are not using 5e, I think it's a benefit that they are not experienced role-playing players.
they're not corrupted by the D20. it's a great point to have this shared meta knowledge that we have to emphasize that this is a rotation, players or GMs or both, and find out this and one of the like the key marks of this way to play is that for me it's that you cannot have a meta plot as such. You cannot have a focused player focused in a campaign focused way. You can focus on a player in a single session, but the next session that player are not in the scope of the story. So there can be some immersion problems and some problems with how to create that. But if the players are knowledgeable about that,
so we actually had a discussion a while ago in our group how to do that, and we made up a rule set for it, and we never used it. So I think maybe this is more in theory. Maybe it depends on your players, but we had a player, for instance, that wanted it was his whole mission to kill a troll. He needed the head of a troll to do something back in his homeland. So that was like the main motivation for this guy to do quests. There was no trolls left in the old world. He has to come to the new world, see if there's any trolls there so he can kill it. It would be very anticlimactic for this player playing 2 years in the campaign and then someone else found a troll and killed it. Especially if he was on the adventure just before that, cheering, there might be a troll living up here. And then he wasn't on the next adventure, they'll go kill the troll. Yeah. So we made a house rule that you could call dibs on a quest, saying, just communicating on our social media that we have found this a clue about this. You can also write it in a note, for instance. There's clues about a troll in the cave up the mountain. And then someone could write in the note, my character would very much like to go there. It's part of why I'm here. You could write that in the note, so whoever would read about this would also need read this person want to go there. Or you could just write on our Facebook thread when you could see the other players communicating about where to go, saying, "Oh, I can see you plan on going to kill the possible troll in the cave. I would very much like to be there when you go there. I think you should find something else. Maybe do this quest instead." I've heard that's big treasures over here. In my player group, there's not been any drama about this, but I can see, depending on your players, that this might there might be some sort of competitiveness. I've seen stories about West Market where this can be an issue, that people, they hear about a dungeon and they want to be the one clearing them, so they want to keep the information for themselves so no one else go and steal their treasure. So I think if you have that sort of competitiveness,
that's also seems like a toxic group to have in. So there's a lot of other issues than just clearing a dungeon in that group. So that's that's a whole different other talk, Janik, about player and group.
But it's just it might be reinforced by you not being there every time. So if you can know your players and you know, okay, I have half my group is that kind of player that would just, they always want all the loot and they hate when they're not included in something, then maybe that player should not be a part of this campaign, or you should definitely have a serious talk to them before including them in the campaign if this is what you want to do, or ensuring that
I would probably
this is definitely something you need to talk about for with that kind of player.
But Janik, I don't have any more for you tonight. It was so great to talk to you about the West Marches, and of course I want to talk to you again about some other, maybe some Tales from the Loop. I'm picking up the game very soon, so I'll have to test it out. So that would be pretty cool to have a talk to you about that if you want that. So I hope you enjoyed yourself in our talk about West Marches. got all the info out for our listeners about West Marches.
I very much appreciate it. And I wanted to share this whole way of make sure that you are not being too burdened by doing all the coordination, and put that back on the players.
Yeah.
It's so much better to be DM in a system like that. And then I would like to make sure to emphasize that this is actually a quote from Ben Robbins when someone has been arguing, how do you do this the right way? And his response to that is that there's more than one way to march west.
Yeah.
And I think that's it's a good learning.
That's a great quote to and a great quote to end this talk with for sure. But thanks for this, Yannick, we'll talk again. Bye. Thanks to Yannick to talk to us about West Marches. Next time we want to return to the Free League games and a great dark sci-fi setting called Coriolis with Michael Manager from Germany. So listen in.
Follow us on Facebook, GM Workshop, the podcast. If you want to interact with us and talk to us, give us a message.
Warning, this is a Nerdy production.